Can't sleep? Don't want to sleep? Afraid to sleep? Are the windows closed? Are your doors locked? Did you check your closet? And under your bed? Maybe you should keep a light on in the hallway, just in case. Now settle in. Make yourself comfortable. Lay back, close your eyes, and let me tell you a story.
Arriving January 9th and available for pre-order now, The Reality Reaction Team, a brand new mind-bending sci-fi cyberpunk thriller by author Joe Prosit. In the distant future, humanity spends its time dancing through layers of simulated universes inside of simulated universes, while the real world crumbles around them. The powers that be offer a simple solution. Take the long nap and enter a decade-long hibernation while a select few rebuild Earth into a utopia. Two young lovers, Josh, a hallucinating lowlife, and Ziggy, a university student determined to quantify objective truth, find themselves caught in a spiraling tangle of conspiracy, illusion, and worlds within worlds as they begin to decipher the sinister facade of the long nap and find important allies in a mysterious group called the Reality Reaction Team. Pre-order your ebook or paperback now at joeprosit.com.
Max Fathom is a self-described simulation hacker. He has come to the conclusion that our world, in fact our entire universe, is nothing more than a massively elaborate computer program, and we are all just bits of code in some cosmic video game. Most of his friends pass off his worldview as a harmless eccentricity. That is, until they find themselves at its mercy. The fatalistic forgetfulness function. I padded my pockets, running through a well-rehearsed mantra in my head. Keys, wallet, phone. Keys, wallet, phone. One by one, I made sure each essential item was in my possession as I prepared to walk out my front door. As I reached for the doorknob, I heard a voice chime in from the living room sofa. "You'll be back," he promised, as he turned the page of the newspaper he was reading. "Excuse me?" "Don't even bother trying to make sure you have everything you need. No one can leave their home without forgetting something." He lowered the paper and offered me a friendly, yet still somehow smug, smile. "I don't have time for your crazy theories, Max," I told my friend. He had dropped in 3 days earlier, just after my wife had left to spend time with her ailing mother. He coincidentally was in town and needed a place to stay. It was nice to have his company, but it came at a price. "It's not a theory, it's a feature of the simulation." I rolled my eyes. Max Fathom was a firm believer in the hypothesis that the world we lived in was actually a massive simulation being run on an unimaginably powerful computer, and we were just bits and bytes driven by alien algorithms. "Don't you mean a bug?" "Actually, a bug can be exploited, and I haven't found a way around the fatalistic forgetfulness function." "I don't have time for this, Max. We can talk more about your felicitous forgetting phantasm when I get home. I have to get to the office for a meeting." "All right, don't let me keep you. Have a good day." "Thank you." I opened the front door and bounded down the steps of my front porch toward my waiting car. Only it wasn't waiting for me. It was gone. I searched up and down the street for any sign of my red Prius. It was nowhere to be found. Then I remembered. I had parked it in the garage the night before because this was the day they do street cleaning on my side of the block. I turned around, trudged up the steps, and entered the house. "That's one," Max said. He was playing a game of solitaire on my coffee table.
"One what?"
"The first iteration of the function. You'll return 5 times before you actually are able to leave the house."
"5 times? That's crazy. I didn't write the code."
"No one wrote the code," I insisted.
arguing about whether or not the simulation existed seemed to be where all of my conversations with Max ended up. He made a frustratingly convincing argument for its existence, and had even turned exploiting it into a kind of career. At least it seemed he was able to make a living off of it somehow. "And yet, here you are. What did you forget?" Max asked. "Nothing," I answered, but my expression betrayed my lie. Max raised a skeptical eyebrow. "Okay, I forgot that I parked my car in the garage." He nodded, then resumed flipping cards. I headed for the back door. "See you in a few seconds," Max taunted. "No, you won't," I promised. I walked through the kitchen to the back porch, opened the back door, and descended the steps toward the path to the detached garage. Just to be sure, I paused and checked one more time before crossing the yard. Keys, wallet, phone. All were still there. I entered the garage and hit the button to open the door. Light filled the garage as it raised, and I opened the driver's side door and slid into the car. As much as I liked Max, he sometimes got on my nerves, and his insistence that we were subroutines in a simulation always made me a little crazy. Probably because most of the time, the bizarre hacks he used to navigate life actually worked. For example, he told me that he knew Jill would be out of town and he would be able to stay in the guest room even though her unplanned trip was a last-minute emergency. He claimed that if he made a specific plan to visit someone and didn't tell them he was coming, invariably when he got there, he would find they were unexpectedly out of town. "So," he told me, "in order to visit you, I just made plans to visit Jill and didn't tell anyone. She was inevitably called away and we get a week to hang out." "Why would you make plans to visit my wife?" I had asked. "I just told you. Keep up, Phil," he had replied. Well, this time he was going to be proved wrong. I started the car and was just about to put it into gear when I noticed a six-pack of beer bottles on the floor of the passenger's side of my car. Darn, I'd forgotten that when I had gone shopping the previous night that I had put the beer on the floor so it wouldn't fall over in the trunk. If I drove to work and I left it sitting in the sun all day, it would likely explode all over the car. I contemplated leaving it in the garage, but it would get too hot there, too. As much as I resented having to do it, I turned off the car, picked up the beer, and made my way back to the house. Max was in the kitchen, wearing Jill's apron and pouring batter from a mixing bowl into a pan. "That's two," he said, without looking at me. I opened the fridge and put the beer inside. "Ha ha, this has nothing to do with your silly simulation. I just forgot that I had left the beer in the car. You are inextricably coupled to the fatalistic forgetfulness function," Max said, almost as a warning. "You'll be back three more times." "No, I will not. This is the last time I'll be returning to the house. You won't be seeing me again until 5:30 tonight." "Okay, I'll save you some brownies," he replied as he slipped the pan into the oven. "Thank you and goodbye." I headed once more to the garage and got behind the wheel of my car. Before I started it, I repeated once more, keys, wallet, phone, checking to make sure each one was still where it was supposed to be. Satisfied that there were no reasons I would have to return to the house, I started my car and edged out into the alley. I was about halfway out before I put my foot on the brake and reversed back into the garage. Knowing the answer, but checking anyway, I reached around to the belt loop where I clipped the retractable cord connected to my ID badge from my office. It wasn't there. I could just go to the office, take the elevator to the receptionist on the 10th floor, and ask for a temporary badge to use for the day, but that would definitely make me later for my meeting than going back into the house and grabbing it off my dresser. But was I willing to endure one of Max's "I told you so's"? I turned off the car and headed back into the house, but instead of going in through the back door, I walked around to the front, hoping he was still occupied in the kitchen. I quietly turned the knob and opened the door. 3, Max said. He was shuffling the cards he was playing solitaire with earlier. I forgot my badge, I told him. I've been working from home so much lately. No need to explain. You're caught in a loop. Nothing to be done about it. You just need to complete the 5 iterations before you can exit the function. I am not caught in a loop. I just work from home more these days than I go into the office, and obviously don't need my badge every day. Exactly. All parameters that feed the function, he explained. There is no function. There is no simulation, I said. There is just life, and some days life kicks you in the butt. Let me ask you something, Max said, standing and walking over next to me. He shuffled the cards in his hands. What do you think are the odds that if I flip these cards in the air, that they would land arranged as a house on the coffee table? Impossible, I told him. Well, technically, it's not strictly impossible. There is a chance each card could land perfectly so that they lean up against each other and form into layers, and there's also a chance flying monkeys will crash through my window and steal my TV. But it's not going to happen. Phil, you do know that there is no such thing as a flying monkey, Max said, as if I was the crazy one. Max, realistically, there is no way you could flip those cards and have them land exactly in the shape of a house or anything else except a random mess. That's true. We could watch me flip these cards into the air a million times and never see them land in an orderly structure. I think that's the first thing we've agreed on since you've been here, I told him. I walked into the short hallway leading to my bedroom to fetch my badge and clip it to my belt loop.
So you're saying we would never witness that happen?
Max shouted from the living room. I returned to find him still shuffling the cards. Exactly. See you tonight, I said, as I headed for the back door once again.
Ergo, the only way it could happen is if we aren't watching.
I heard cards being flipped into the air and stopped in my tracks. Don't look back, I told myself. You're going to be late for your meeting. I waited for Max to say something, anything, but he remained silent. This doesn't count as number 4 if I turn around, does it? I asked.
Not at all. This is a completely different asynchronous subroutine.
Slowly, I turned on the balls of my feet, spinning back round to face Max, who was standing in front of the coffee table. Behind him was a perfect house of cards, 3 layers tall.
Did it work? He asked.
Nice trick, I told him. I didn't realize you had taken up magic. Suppose you made that one earlier, glued it together, and swapped it out when my back was turned.
Max turned and touched a corner of the structure.
The movement caused the whole thing to collapse.
I don't have time for this, Max. I gotta go, I said, checking my watch, which was thankfully on my wrist where it was supposed to be. Okay, see you tonight.
Goodbye. I hurried out the back door and back to the garage. I got into the car, started it up, and pulled into the alley. Fatalistic forgetfulness function, I said mockingly. There was no way I was going to let Max's crazy notions get into my head. This meeting was too important for me to be distracted. I was presenting a proposal for a project that would hopefully put me in position for a promotion. I laughed. The potential promotion project presentation sounded like one of Max's crazy names for his simulation hacks. I had spent the night tweaking and adjusting the slideshow on my personal computer. It was flawless. And, I also realized, it was on the flash drive which was still plugged into my laptop on the desk of my home office. I drove around the block to the front of the house and parked on the opposite side of the street to avoid getting a ticket for violating the street-sweeping prohibition. I took a deep breath before getting out and walked up the steps to the front door. Max had an easel set up and was painting on a canvas. Where the art supplies had come from, I had no idea. I shot him a warning look that hopefully conveyed the message that saying anything about this being my 4th time returning would be grounds for instant expulsion.
Regardless, he raised an inquisitive eyebrow. I forgot my presentation, I explained. I was working on it last night on my laptop, and I left the thumb drive plugged in. Max nodded understandingly. I walked toward the small room off the kitchen I used as an office, retrieved the memory stick, and slipped it into my pocket. I took a moment to run a mental inventory, adding to my mantra. Keys, wallet, phone, watch, thumb drive. I had everything I needed. Nothing was going to make me come back into this house before I made it to the office. I walked back toward the front door, passing Max and his painting. On the canvas was an ornate rendition of the number 4. Very funny, I told him. I didn't give him a chance to add any more of his pearls of wisdom about the simulation as I exited the house, crossed the street, and got back into my car. I started it up and heard a chime from my phone. I pulled it out of my pocket and looked at the screen. It was an email, a work email. I turned the car off, grabbed the steering wheel firmly with both hands, and screamed as loud as I could. Then I got out, ambled up the sidewalk to my front steps, and opened the door. Max was sitting on the living room sofa, knitting something. I couldn't tell what. I flopped down next to him. That's 5, I said. That's 5, Max agreed. What did you forget? Don't you know? Hacking the simulation is more of an art than an exact science, he said. I tossed him my phone and he looked at the screen and laughed. The email was a link to join the online session for my upcoming presentation. I'd forgotten that it was a virtual meeting. Turns out, I never had to leave the house at all today. A bell rang in the kitchen. Ooh, the brownies are ready. Want some? Max asked. Sure, Max. Why not? It was actually somewhat comforting to know that if I was indeed living in a simulation, at least there were brownies. Thank you for listening to The Fatalistic Forgetfulness Function, written especially for the Bedtime Stories for Insomniacs fiction podcast by Rich Hosek. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. But most importantly, please share these stories with anyone you know who enjoys audiobooks. If you sign up for the Insomniacs newsletter at bedtimestories.studio, you will receive a free audio or ebook edition of The Charlatan's Conundrum and other Bedtime Stories for Insomniacs. You can find out more about the host of Bedtime Stories for Insomniacs at richhosek.com. Thanks again, and all the very best.
The Luke in Time Mysteries begins with two private detectives. Luke, who's got a little bit of a drinking problem, and her partner Lyle, who's got a little bit of an eating problem. Together, they've got pretty big money problem. So when Marva walks into their office, offering gobs of cash, if they can find someone who's trying to kill her, they take the job without asking any question, which becomes their biggest problem, because soon enough, they walk into a trap and wind up dead. But that's not where this story ends. In fact, it's just the setup, because they go back to the moment where they first met Marva, and until Luke and Lyle can solve Marva's mystery, they keep dying over and over again. If this book sounds like something you'd enjoy, check the links in the show notes to learn more.
You can find out more about the 9 lives of Marva DeLonghi and the Luke and Time Mysteries at jodyjsperling.com.